everybody, and welcome to Teachers Talking Tech. This is Eric Robinson, and I'm coming to you from my house because schools here in Michigan have been closed. And we had almost no time to plan or think about what we were going to do. And so I wanted to not only talk about some different tools you could use and for distance learning, but I also wanted to just talk about should we be doing distance learning? What's appropriate in a time like this? It's really hard to say because most of us have not been through something like this before. So I reached out to Dr. Monica Burns, and she's a friend of the show. She is an EdTech consultant, and I knew she would be the person to talk to because she's not going to just talk to us about tools that we can use for this. But I knew she would have a thoughtful response to how we should be handling this as teachers, and I was right. It was a great conversation with her, and without further ado, let's get into it with Dr. Monica Burns. Hi there, this is Eric from Teachers Talking Tech, and I am here with Dr. Monica Burns. Hello, Monica.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Great, and Monica is I'd call you a friend of the show, because I think this is maybe your third visit with us, something like that. And if you're not familiar, Monica Burns is an ed tech consultant. She has a podcast called The Easy Ed Tech Podcast. She has a book, Tasks Before Apps, that you can get on Amazon. She's also got an ed tech blog, an Easy Ed Tech Club, and people can kind of find all this on your website, right?
That's right. Yeah, everything's pretty much at classtechtips.com. You'll find the podcast there and the membership site and all the blog posts. So lots going on right there on the landing page. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I wanted to get Monica on the podcast today because, you know, obviously there's a lot going on right now. A lot of questions and teachers scrambling, trying to figure out what they can do to connect with kids while schools may be closed or are on the verge of closing. And, you know, before we even talk about strategies and things to consider about distance learning, I think it's important to note that we're not advocating distance learning. I think this has got to be a district by district, state by state decision on whether or not this is even appropriate. So please don't take what we're saying here as that we're advocating that you should just start distance learning tomorrow with your kids, because there are a lot of issues that are kind of unresolved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, first and foremost, and I feel really strongly about this, that, you know, teachers should not be expected to start anything from scratch with a couple days, a couple weeks even notice. You know, there's been time to prepare, but that's been very kind of all over the place in different spots. You know, teachers are often, you know, their caregiver for their own family, right, or have other folks that they are taking care of that really need to take priority. I really worry, especially with some of the, you know, Twitter chatter and Facebook things and expectations families might have if they are not a teacher and they kind of want their kids occupied while they're maybe working remotely, right? I just worry that teachers might feel guilted or shamed right into having to pull something together, right? Really at this kind of last minute, if you will, in a very unprecedented situation. I mean, I'm here on the East Coast and we have mandated self-quarantines of different neighborhoods just a few miles from my house, you know, mandated curfews. And so it's a really serious situation where, you know, I think the best role for a teacher or for an instructional coach or someone who might be not at kind of making large decisions for a district or school, right, really has to consider what their priority is in terms of their own family and what it is they need to take care of, but then also pushing priorities onto another family that might really need to, you know, make some tough decisions over the next few weeks regarding their health and safety and childcare, where they might not be able to be caught up, even if something is set up in Google Classroom with the best intentions.
Yeah, I think that what I noticed when schools started being talked about closing in Michigan, teachers immediately were trying to think of ways they could just continue what they do every day, but at home. But then I think after that kind of dies down for a second, one of the best posts that I saw early on was that, you know, let's go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So I'm going all the way back to college, like thinking like, what does that look like again?
Mm-hmm.
But just that idea that in the classroom, we all know that kids need to feel that they're safe, that their basic needs are being met before they're ready to learn. And this is a perfect test case for this at home, where there are so many families, not just kids, that are not to that part of that hierarchy where they could feel like they could take on new information and process it or do tasks for a teacher. They're just not there yet.
And that's where, you know, I've been having conversations over the past week or so as things have been getting increasingly, you know, serious. And I know folks are also pointing towards examples in different spots overseas where people have been dealing with this more seriously for, you know, a number of weeks, a couple months, you know, at this point, kicking off 2020. But what I've really been sharing to people is I'm looking at this really in two categories. One is using and leveraging what you have. So if you already have systems in place, whether it's Seesaw with your second graders or Schoology or Microsoft Teams with your high school students, right? If you have a foundation and it's working already, maybe you're in a pseudo flipped or, you know, a hybrid model, right? You have something you can really lean into at this time, right? That also goes back to that caveat of, you know, a teacher who is monitoring that, right, does not have the prep time, does not have, you know, the time at home necessarily to carve out, doesn't necessarily have a Wi-Fi structure, might have a lot of little kids or big kids or family members they're taking care of. So, you know, there's got to be that balance between, yes, we have some systems in place if you want to participate, but I think giving teachers an opportunity to participate in that and I'm not necessarily saying, you know, an opt-in, opt-out as much as just acknowledging that everyone's participation level might be different when it comes to this, right? And of course, there's even, you know, the HIPAA issues of a teacher, you know, whether or not they need to tell everyone that they are autoimmune compromised, right? Or to say, like, I can't really do this right now, or we're handling this other family kind of emergency within this. So that idea of leveraging what you have, I think, can be really powerful with those caveats. But then what I'm sharing to other folks who are kind of more in scramble mode of, let's get everyone set up, or let's do this right now, or let's do that, you know, I would recommend to them to use all these wonderful ed tech tools that are out there. A lot of companies are giving, you know, free access, but using that more to make recommendations for families and say, hey, if you're looking for this, or here are some resources we have a district think might be great for your child for these three reasons, and using them more as recommendations, you know, and not mandates. And even that, you know, gets to be tricky because you have students with IEPs and 504s, there's data privacy concerns here. And so, you know, I know that we're in uncharted territories in terms of handling all these pieces, but I don't think that, you know, that should be ignored.
And this is one of those situations that it probably is going to be, as we look back a few weeks from now, taking it slow is going to be okay. You know, of course, we're worried about our students losing learning time. But if we take it slow, we can really think about those privacy issues, all these different things that when we're trying something we've never tried before, we don't want to step in more potholes than we need to. I mean, I was just, you know, I was talking to our tech director the other day, and we were talking about the possibility of taking home our devices. And immediately we had to think about, well, we've got pictures and videos of kids in the classroom environment on these iPads, and we have to think through, like, are we violating children's privacy?
Absolutely.
You know, and the next thing is, if you're using a platform such as Seesaw or Google Classroom, are they set up in a way that when you send devices home, that child, when they have their family around them, are families going to be able to see other children's work in your class and feedback and things like that? Because that can get into, FERPA is the kind of version of privacy law for students. You can get into some sticky situations. And I think that people are willing to overlook a few things when you're in a kind of a emergency mode. But at the same time, I think if we just take it mindfully and we take it step by step, there are good ways to do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that idea of, right, I would imagine that everyone is coming into this with the best intentions, right? But there are some serious, you know, consequences when we are making decisions without that thoughtfulness. So if you already have, right, an at-home learning strategy, you might not be completely online or anything like that. But if you, for with that seesaw example, right, if your fourth graders have been bringing home their iPads all year and you have strategies in place for when and they can't use the camera or where they post something, right, or anything like that, like you're probably set when it comes to that sort of privacy issue. Your district has thought about those things, right? You're working with a plan that's established. It's these kind of on the fly things. And I heard, you know, I saw someone post just this morning, right, on Facebook, like, I don't know why everyone, you know, doesn't just say yes to Zoom conferencing and letting everyone do video chat. This is, you know, something where it's an emergency situation. We just have to act, you know, and that sort of stuff is really irresponsible, frankly. And it's really, you know, coming from a place of not really understanding, right, what the big kind of pieces here. And I even had someone reach out to me on Twitter yesterday saying, you know, my district's not using any sort of video chat at home. We haven't, right, gotten into that yet. And we're just being told, no, do you know any audio options, right? Because they don't even want to use software like a Skype where you could turn on and off a video, which I think is valid, right? Of course, even from a teacher perspective, you know, especially if you're working from home and you don't have maybe an environment where, you know, it's appropriate to have the video on, or you don't want to make teachers feel like they have to be on video, right? Let alone, all right, any of those other pieces. And so, you know, her and I were talking quickly and I said, you know, maybe you want to present, right, a free conference call type of option if that fits within, right, a district plan, or if you're trying to check off some boxes like on a privacy form and you're looking for something that might address all those pieces, right? So I totally agree with you that kind of going slow into this and being as thoughtful as possible is really important. Right? It really is all about, you know, prioritizing things without just making decisions quickly.
So let's talk about, assuming that a district has a plan in place, you've got some, you know, a plan that you're going to use that's respecting students' privacy and things like that. Let's start talking about maybe some tools, because I think that some of these tools, as we come out of this crisis on the other side, I think that we are going to have learned some lessons and found some, maybe some teachers have found some tools they can use not only for distance learning, but they could use them just in their classroom. So I want to talk about a few of those with you. And there are some I have kind of earmarked here that I'm a little less familiar with, but only because I teach K-2. You know, so I'll go over a couple that I love for lower L, and I'm sure you have some of your favorites as well. But for obviously Seesaw for me is such a great platform for learning at home, and they did do some updates lately where you can print these home codes. So where you would have had students potentially seeing everybody in your class, if they download the app at home, instead you send these home codes, and then the parents can use that QR code or link to access their child's journal. So you can send them, you know, the not assignments. I'm trying to think of the other word. The
activities, right?
Activities. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So you can share activities with your kids. And they can turn them back into you, or they can post to a journal, but you can't see other kids within the classroom, and that code handles that. And I think that's great. And I think too, another one that I know is being used would be obviously Google Classroom, maybe for upper L all the way through high school. And I know you know a little bit more about Google Classroom than I do. What are some other tools that you think would work great for this?
Yeah, so I am a huge fan of Seesaw, big fan of Google Classroom, right? And I think, you know, I love how you introduced this as an opportunity not to just start this tomorrow, but to say, you know, if we're using this, how can we really reflect on what it looks like when we're in a more, you know, 24-hour, right, at home, as opposed to, right, half the day or something where kids might check in on something, right, at home. And so, yeah, I think some of the big kind of things that, you know, are on my mind or how this might translate into more blended learning blended learning environments within a classroom where, you know, you might have kids who are building a little bit more independence to share or submit, right, on different devices, especially if they've been practicing that outside of school hours a little bit more than they might have in the past. Maybe that was something they did at home 2 times a week, but now maybe they're doing it once a day as opposed to just every once in a while. So with those, you know, I think there's something really powerful there too. I, you know, from a platform perspective, have been following along what the folks at Microsoft have been doing in terms of sharing some remote learning resources, specifically around their products and Microsoft Teams. So I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of adoption takes place where people might have access to the Microsoft tools, be inside of the platform already, and then have more of that kind of team conversation, right? So I always think of Teams as being a little bit more like Slack almost for kids, right? Or for K-12 folks who are in that environment. So more kind of chats and posting and threads. And so a little bit more of a, you know, robust discussion. But if you're in an environment, right, I know you mentioned some elementary friendly tools, but if you're in an environment where high school students are already, right, in a process of submitting things online, maybe you have your content like on a timed or gradual release for the semester, and you're in a space like Blackboard, right, this might be an opportunity to really lean into online commenting and practicing discussions within those spaces, you know, already. And so, you know, another one that I think is a good use case, and I don't mean this to kind of demonize them, but I think it's a really good example of, you know, best intentions in this space, is a lot of tools are right now providing free access to schools that are closed. And this started about 3 weeks ago with a couple different tools when I think these companies, again, with their best intentions, felt like, oh, it's going to be a couple pockets every once in a while, like maybe it's going to be here. But obviously we're in a position right now where there's, I think, like a dozen right now states as a whole state that have closed schools. And so, you know, Shobi is an example, and I really love their tool, but they, you know, made this offer and then right away were overwhelmed, right? Their systems couldn't handle it. And they kind of they rescinded that offer, right? They said, we overstepped here. We thought we could do this and we can't, right, offer this to you. And I can't imagine how they all felt, right, having to do that. I don't even mean it from like a PR standpoint, but, you know, a lot of these companies are full of educators and former educators and folks who really are in this for the right reasons, right? So they have the best intentions. But, you know, I think that's a good example, as unfortunate as that situation is, of these unintended consequences with any of these pieces. And so I think it's an interesting one to look at here when we look back and say, right, what does it look like from a bandwidth perspective or support perspective, right? If you're choosing a new initiative moving forward and you know that distance learning might be something that has to happen, school shutdown a couple times a year or something like that, then you're going to want to make sure you're working with a company or a team that can handle a really big influx of users or a big uptick in terms of downloads or something like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really do feel like all these ed tech companies that are doing the free either trials or just giving the pro version during this time, I do think they're doing it with the best of intentions. I really, it doesn't seem like any kind of a marketing thing. I think that they just really feel for the situation. And one other one that I actually found that was kind of cool is, I know we've talked about Nearpod in the past. And if you want to learn more about Nearpod, you can, there's a lot of different videos that'll tell you how it works. But if you go to nearpod.com/redeem, and then you put in NP, like no paper, NP, and then dash event S20, you can actually get 3 months free of their premium service, which is kind of nice. It's probably be a little more for older kids if you're sharing it at home, but you can share videos and assignments and things like that through Nearpod. And it's a great app. And if you were already using it but had the free version, it'll just give you a little more tools to work with.
Glad you shared that one. Yeah, I love Nearpod. I've worked with their team. I've been a fan of them for a while. And I was actually, not this past week, but the week before, as kind of this all has been unfolding, I was in Seattle for NCCE, their kind of regional conference, their ISTE affiliate. And so it's one of the last, it might be, right, the last of the EdTech conferences that has been running for the spring. And while I was there, you know, they were very serious. It was in Seattle. Things were very shut down while I was there. And so they were very serious about making decisions and kind of going through with the event and all that. But that being said, as I was there, you know, there were schools that were starting to close or knew that it was imminent for them. I was there on a Thursday and a Friday, so they were anticipating many of them that on Monday they would be closed. This is of this past week. And so, you know, one of the questions that came up, because I did show Nearpod because I love it, was a teacher saying, you know, can I do this while my kids are at home, right? And so if you've ever been on a Nearpod webinar, they run a lot of PD and a lot of webinars. You know that you jump into a webinar room, there's no video or anything, and usually they shut off audio for participants. That way you can just kind of ask a question, typing it in, and it's not a bunch of people's dogs barking in the background. And so they'll give you the code, and then whoever's leading that lesson can actually move through slide by slide, pause, say, hey, if you want to type something in the chat, if anyone has any questions. So Nearpod is a tool that you can do in that webinar style format. So you don't actually all have to be in the same room or the same place. You just kind of have to be dialed in. You don't even have to share a screen, frankly, right? Because I could give you the code and it could just pop up. But as long as you hear me talking through the activities or mentioning things or explaining things, you can have it with audio as well. So again, right, as we've said a couple times, right, you want to make sure that the systems in place allow themselves for that, right, for kids to be able to dial into a conference number or open up your school's Skype account or whatever it might be. But Nearpod is a really good option for leading a presentation when someone's not in the same room and you want to share your screen on whatever device they have. It's also very smartphone friendly.
Great. And one I wanted to run by you, because I have mixed feelings about how it would work, is Flipgrid. And for people that are not familiar with Flipgrid, you basically, you know, create a class and then you record directions. And it could be video directions or audio, YouTube videos. There's a million ways to do the directions. And then the people in your class take a video to respond to your question. And it works great in the classroom. You know, it's a great way for kids to, you know, basically give you a quick form of assessment. And it's made in a fun way as well. But I know that they have on their website a whole thing about home learning. And I wanted to get your take on that, Monica, just because it's video and live, you know, or semi-live audio and video. And I don't know what kind of, you know, potential problems you might run into with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some parallels even to your experience with Seesaw, right? Where there's the camera so someone can upload something and take a picture, right? It's all the same sort of issues there. Seesaw makes it a little easier. Maybe if you give out devices and disable the camera and say you can share in all these other ways, right? So, you know, there's workarounds there that are maybe not there with Flipgrid, but absolutely. I think that the same concerns when it comes to video use is really important to consider here. That being said, I love Flipgrid. I think it's a really powerful tool. I love their team. I had a chance to go and visit their office in Minneapolis, and they're all just so wonderful, passionate, and thoughtful people when it comes to all of these things. So I know that this is a group that's taking their, you know, all these recommendations really seriously when they pull these pieces together. So, you know, I'll just share that when I've used Flipgrid in classrooms. So I am out of the classroom. I'm no longer a classroom teacher. I'm an independent consultant, but I visit a lot of schools and work with students and I work with teachers. And some of those schools I have longer placements with. But, you know, there's a school where I was spending some time with a group of fifth graders, and I knew these fifth graders pretty well. You know, I visited their classroom several times. And so their teacher was talking about formative assessment strategies. And so the kind of bottom line here is I was demoing Flipgrid for the group and introducing it to the kids for the first time. And, you know, a lot of us, especially probably, you know, those who spend time with children, know that not every kid is, you know, comfortable on video. I think if you're outside of the classroom, you just think kids love TikTok, right? They love video, right? Or something like, you know, some crazy generalization that's not really accurate. So when I was introducing this to these 10 and 11 year olds, and I taught fifth grade for almost 7 years, so I'm very familiar with the age group, you know, I said to them, you know, this is a video tool. It's kind of like talking into the camera. If you don't want to do this, right, put a post-it note over the camera, put your hand over the camera, cover yourself with an emoji, which Flipgrid lets you like fill the whole screen with emojis if you wanted to. And it was really interesting in this group to see like what the split was, right? Some kids, even the kids I may not have guessed because they, you know, were a little quieter in their conversations, were just ready to talk into the camera. Other kids who were very outgoing, and, you know, I'm someone who doesn't come to their classroom every day, but they always want to chat with me, right? Cover their face with an emoji because they don't want anyone to see them, right? So there's that aspect of it, even from a classroom standpoint of comfort level and what's appropriate and like all of that. When you're doing this at home, right, if you haven't introduced Flipgrid to your kids before and this is the first time, right, this might not be the best for them. You know, you might also have kids who, you know, when they come to school and they're self-conscious about their outfit because it's not as fancy as the kids sitting next to them, how are they going to feel when you can see, you know, their kitchen behind them and it doesn't look like their friend's kitchen, right? So there's those kind of aspects where I say this just as a, you know, word of caution and to make sure that we're thinking of these unintended consequences before they become consequences, right? So kind of that's a long-winded way of just getting at this idea that if you're already using Flipgrid and you have a home protocol and your kids are used to giving book club updates on Flipgrid once a week at home and you've thought about all of those things before, right? Then yeah, I would say keep going with it if you already have that routine in place. If this is new to you and your families, I don't know that this is the right time to start this.
Great points. Yeah. And I mean, I think teachers need to be careful of that too. If you're recording a message for your students via video, you know, for example, you have a wine bottle in the back or whatever it is. These are all things that are not recoverable. Like you can't just take these things back. So we need to be careful. So, you know, and moving on to the next thing, I know that Zoom, for people who are not familiar with Zoom, Zoom is a video conferencing app. Think, you know, FaceTime or Google Hangouts, or I think they call it Google Meet now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I thought about this for a second and I thought about how could teachers use this. And actually what I came up with, because Zoom has such an easy screen share feature, I think this would be good if your district has decided to use technology tools and maybe they are some things that have been used, but not widely. So maybe the kids are familiar with them, but you know, not every teacher uses them in the same way. I was thinking with Zoom, it'd be a great opportunity for a teacher or staff member to run a PD for other teachers where they could do a screen share. They could do, you know, they could run through slides or demo these tools for others. And Zoom has opened up as well that their pro version is now free for educators. I think it's for 60 days at least. So you, it really opens it up how many people you can have in a room and some of the different features. But, you know, that's the other thing to keep in mind is some schools, like our school, we can't get into right now. It's locked down. Mm-hmm. And we're, as teachers, we aren't even allowed to go in for a meeting. So this might be a great tool for that.
Yeah, so one of the things I really like about Zoom, and I'm sure they're not the only one, you know, as I'm kind of comparing things in my head, right? But I know this for sure for Zoom is that if you were leading a Zoom call, you can set it up so that the attendees, when they enter, their camera is off. They can't turn it on if they even want to, and that their audio is off. So it's really just, well, you know, webinar style, if you will, right? So you could still have a chat going. I'm pretty sure with Zoom, you can disable the chat, but I would need to take another look. I haven't been kind of in the back end of theirs in a little bit. So yeah, I mean, of course, same considerations with being mindful of, you know, do I record this webinar I'm giving for teachers with updates because I want to be respectful of what their home life schedule might look like, of course, right? So that's going to be part of it too. And I know everywhere is different, but sometimes, you know, when we think about this, right, there's just, you know, unions and contracts and things to consider with all of this that I don't think we're really there yet in many places. But that's something that if this is a long term thing, I think, you know, might become part of the conversation a little bit more just in terms of what's expected of folks or what's reasonable and all of that. But when you are, you know, giving out messaging for families, right? That might be a platform that you want to think about sharing, right? So especially, you know, I would encourage folks to think about things that are going to be smartphone friendly too. And I say that with, of course, the acknowledgement that not everyone has a smartphone, right? If that, but you may have more of your school who doesn't have computers, maybe having access to a smartphone. I know here in New York and in my area, all of our public libraries are closed within our region. So there's not even the option that we might have said in the past, well, a family could go to the library as if that was easy for them to do, you know, 2 weeks ago, right? Anyhow, but we could always kind of fall back on some of those community supports. So making sure that you have things that are SMS friendly too is going to be important with your messaging. So it's great to share links to things or things someone could click on and open up on their smartphone. And I encourage people to, you know, if you found a really great, you know, vetted YouTube channel like Storyline Online for read aloud videos, you know, push that out, right? Share that with folks. So if you already have those communication channels and say, hey, here's a place for stories. If you're looking for a great YouTube channel, like that's awesome. But if you do have messaging that needs to go out to all families, right? You're going to want to make sure it's friendly in your communication system, similar to what you would do for a snow day, if you will. So it might be more of the phone call home in addition to, hey, we're hosting this webinar online if you'd like to join, but don't worry, this is the key points for it as well. Or here's how you can ask us questions if you can't join or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of teachers, you know, you send maybe a digital newsletter, but you have to make sure that you send a paper version as well. Absolutely. And we're not in the classroom, that digital equity becomes even more of an issue. And I did read, I know Comcast, if you have Comcast in your area, they are giving away, they have free hotspots now. It used to be you had to be a Comcast customer to use their hotspots, and they're all over the place. But now they're opening those up. And then they're also giving free service. And I don't remember the timeline on that, but they are giving away free service. So if you already have cable or you have the ability to get cable internet, you know, that would be an option. I think AT&T and Verizon also said that they are lifting data caps and fees in I think all over the country, and you'd have to look into that more to figure out exactly what that looks like for you. But those are some things that will help, but it doesn't mean that everybody can still get access to that. It may be helpful, but it's not a solution.
Yeah. And I really like that you use the word helpful, because I think, you know, I did an Instagram TV episode yesterday and I kind of cross-posted on a couple of platforms, right? I think that's the idea here when we're talking about sharing resources that I keep coming back to, right? You know, I would like to be helpful, but I don't want to put any stress or any kind of, I wish I could do this, or I'm not good enough, or I can't figure this out, or I miss that PD, or everyone else in my school knows how to use Google Classroom, but I never got started with it because I was out on maternity leave. Like, these are all things that I just don't want people worrying about. And so, you know, when even I was prepping I sent out a newsletter every Monday, you know, and I kind of wrote something a little different at the top prepping for this week, just saying, you know, these are just things I'm sharing with you in hopes that they're helpful, right? Not because I want you to feel like you need to do this in order to get it right. Like, you might be looking for things that you can share with families, and I want to be helpful, but I don't want to make you feel like you have to start a distance learning initiative yesterday, you know? Yeah. And so I'm so glad that you use that term as well, because that's really where my head is at with all of this, right? How can I be as helpful as I can be, right, with my kind of knowledge and expertise in sharing and curating resources, which I'm sure you're feeling the same way, right, with making sure that I continue to frame it as, here's a value add, you know, if it works for you, but it's not necessarily the priority right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Monica, for joining us. It was awesome to talk to you, and I knew you'd be the right person to call in this situation. I just had a feeling.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having me. You know, I really am just, I'm so glad to hear about, you know, your commitment to sharing resources and being thoughtful. And I look forward to continuing this conversation as we move into the next, you know, few weeks and few months.
All right, well, stay healthy.
You too.
All right, well, thank you again to Dr. Monica Burns. That was a great discussion. I know I learned a lot, and just some things that I had never thought about when I was considering distance learning or maybe what we should be doing for our kids right now. Here are some tips and tricks that I've kind of found online through some reading and seeing what some other consultants and teachers are saying about this situation. The first thing that I would say is you want to make sure you have what a lot of people are calling an online learning doctrine. This means you have a plan from your school district that outlines how you are going to teach remotely. And this could be by grade level, by school, but basically it gives your district one voice. Rather than having a lot of segmented teachers saying, here's how I'm doing it, here's what we're going to do, I think that when you have a plan in place that's a shared plan, it protects you as a teacher. But not only that, it means that people really thought this through, like, how is this going to work best for your students in your district? And just don't forget, there are a lot of equity issues, IEPs, privacy issues. There's so many things that many of us have not dealt with before unless we've done distance learning prior to this. So the next thing is, if you do go ahead with some remote learning, then you should really think about relaxing deadlines and workloads. Everyone's schedules are up in the air. You really don't want to be rigid and say things are due on this time or this date, but really just have things to share with students where they can kind of do it on their own schedule. Remember, there are parents that are trying to figure out where their kids are going to go while they're at work, and it's just not a great time to have due dates. The next thing is figuring out a workspace for yourself. If you are going to be recording video or audio, make sure you have a comfy, clean workspace. Remember, you have an audience here that's going to be watching you, and you really need to be mindful about that. We talked about it with Monica Burns a second ago, where I was talking about if you had a wine bottle in the background. But that's true. If you have something that could be questionable to any of your parents, you really need to think about that. The other thing is, be consistent. You need to make sure you're using tools that students are already familiar with. And I know that that Monica had talked about that when we were having our discussion. But it's not the time to do 3 or 4 platforms at once or introduce new tech to people because it's really cool. It's just not a great time for that. You want to be using tools that everyone's already familiar with. And then finally, the devices and equity. Your district's going to need a plan for this. This should not fall on you as a teacher. The assumption that everyone has a smartphone or a device that students can use is just not realistic. In my district, most folks do have technology. However, we have a large percentage of our population is rural. And so the expectation that they just have internet is not always realistic. So make sure your district provides a plan. It could be that if certain students don't have devices, you send them home. It's just not a great time to be figuring that out, though, on your own. And even districts are really going to struggle with that. So let them work on that and look to your district and administration for guidance on all these things to protect yourself. All right. Well, once again, I just want to say thank you to Monica. It was great to talk to you and get your guidance. I know that Mike and Marie are home and they are safe. And we hope that you all out there, our listeners, are safe and are in good spots as well. All right. Please feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions or comments. We're at TeachersTalkingTech@gmail.com. Or at Teach Some Tech on Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you and hear what kinds of things that you are doing during this time. All right, well, this has been Eric Robinson from Teachers Talking Tech. See ya.